This is the intro for Decatur, Part 1.
Good morning. This is Jane reading for you on another blustery, chilly spring morning, April 9th, and I'll be reading to you from the Herald and Review. Let's go straight to a local's story, a local Decatur story. Headline, Decatur Council authorizes sales tax rebate for KC fines. The Decatur City Council approved a development agreement authorizing a sales tax rebate for KC Fines, an overstock and discount retailer that opened last year in the former Ace Hardware space at 2809 North Main Street. Per the agreement, the city will rebate owners Carol and Richard Kessler 50% of the sales taxes generated by the business for 5 years, up to a maximum of $25,000 total reimbursement. The business, which also offers space for more than 100 local vendors to sell antiques and handcrafted goods, opened last spring, about 2 years after Ace vacated the 20,000-square-foot space. According to a memo to the council from City Manager Tim Gleason, an entire interior remodel was needed due to the building's age and to bring it into compliance with the Americans with Disabilities Act, among other updates. In all, renovation costs were about $275,000. Quote, "This is very reasonable when we look at a space that quite possibly could still be empty if not for Ms. Kessler's business occupying that space," Gleason told council members at their meeting on Monday. "I think that this is definitely a development agreement that should be supported by the council." The council vote was 5-1, with Councilwoman Lisa Gregory voting against. Councilman Pat McDaniel was not present. "This is, in my mind, a great investment," said Councilman Chuck Kuhl. "And she's got a nice operation out there." "I don't think $5,000 a year is a big ask from us," Kuhl said, pointing out that the city has built sewers for millions of dollars to attract businesses in the city's industrial northeast quadrant. Councilman Dennis Cooper said it was, quote, "a good initiative and a good proposal to try," while Councilman David Horn pointed out that this was, quote, "a no-cost incentive for the city." Gregory said she understood her colleague's reasoning, but that, quote, "when I think about the sewer work that we did in the industrial area out east of town, that was to serve and to leverage many more businesses. And so, for me, I'm not sure if we approve this where the line in the sand is," Gregory said. "I think that we need to have some tighter parameters around redevelopment agreements." An agreement between the city and KC Fines first surfaced in December, but was ultimately pulled from the agenda. Under that agreement, the city would have rebated 90% of the sales taxes collected for the first 3 years, 75% in the fourth year, and 50% in the fifth year, and it did not include a $25,000 cap. Gleason said that the original agreement was pulled, rightfully so, but did not elaborate. In other news, the council approved a contract with Charleston-based Arndt Municipal Support Incorporated to conduct a classification and compensation study for the city's 88 non-unionized positions. Gleason said that the study, which will be the first the city has done since 1990, would offer, quote, "a more organized, efficient approach than the one-off strategy the city has often deployed with non-unionized staff in the intervening years." The study will cost $35,070 plus $135 per hour for any services not included in the scope of services. The council also approved a contract with Champaign-based Clifton Larson Allen for professional assessment services focused on the city's finance and human resources departments. The services will include a review of the financial processes to confirm controls, efficiency, and effectiveness, confirm organizational structure and alignment of people and positions within those departments, and assess existing software system. The cost is estimated at $35,750. The council also approved a $146,490 agreement with Paul's Tree Farms, LLC, for installation of 185 trees. The funds come from a $750,000 grant the city received from the U.S. Department of Agriculture to fund the planting, watering, and maintenance of 1,200 trees over the next 5 years. Paul's Tree Farms is donating the trees, only charging for the cost of transportation, installation, root injections, and fertilizer packs. Total savings are estimated at about $211,650,000. The second round of trees will primarily be planted on city property at the 1165 North Jordan Street, 1221 East Condit Street, Decatur Public Library, and the Decatur Civic Center. In November, the council approved the first round of tree planting, about 150 large trees. The goal moving forward will be planting about 250 trees per year. And here's another Decatur story, but with definite international implications. Headline: Howard Buffett says foundation will pass $1 billion in aid to Ukraine this year. As uncertainty in U.S.-Ukraine relations grows, informal ties with some U.S. philanthropists built over 3 years of war with Russia are holding firm. One such benefactor is former Macon County Sheriff Howard G. Buffett, the son of billionaire investor Warren Buffett, and a longtime philanthropic supporter of many Decatur area organizations. He's making his 18th visit to Ukraine since Russia's full-scale invasion of Ukraine in 2022. The trip comes as the new U.S. administration, led by President Donald Trump, is trying to broker a temporary ceasefire between Russia and Ukraine. But the fighting has continued, and it remains unclear whether the United States will maintain its support for Ukraine in repelling Russia's invasion. Quote, "It doesn't change anything we do. We're on track," Buffett told the Associated Press, adding that his Decatur-based foundation will surpass $1 billion in aid to Ukraine this year. He called the prospect of a peace deal impossible. "Putin doesn't want it, and he won't respect it," he said. "There's no easy way to end the war, so we'll stick with it as long as we need to." Buffett, who was appointed county sheriff in 2017 and served 14 months of retiring Sheriff Thomas Schneider's term, gave his badge to Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky in 2022. And an area of the foundation's Decatur farm has been set aside to test machinery for adaptation and survivability for use in the demining of Ukraine, according to its 2023 annual report. The AP caught up with Buffett aboard a train with Ukraine's economy minister, Yulia Sviridenko, on Saturday. Their shared commitment to humanitarian demining brought them together in 2023, and they've remained in close contact since then. Sviridenko calls him one of the greatest friends of Ukraine. Buffett is among a number of Americans across the U.S. political spectrum who support Ukraine's war effort, either through financial aid or volunteer military service, who say the U.S. hasn't done enough to help Ukraine defeat Russia over the past few years. On this trip, Buffett and Sviridenko traveled to the country's northern Sumy region, where the situation has significantly worsened following Ukrainian forces' loss of ground in Russia's Kursk region. They visited the villages of Popivka and Bobrik, which, like much of the region, lie in a high-risk zone for landmines. Parts of the area were occupied by Russian forces in 2022 and are now considered potentially contaminated. They also stopped at a local school that had been relocated to a basement where children now study during hours-long air raid alerts. Buffett's foundation, which focuses on humanitarian needs like agriculture, infrastructure, and mine clearance, has contributed about $800 million to Ukraine since the start of the full-scale invasion, including $175 million in humanitarian demining. Sviridenko's ministry is responsible for Ukraine's humanitarian demining infrastructure. Quote, he understands very well that if a country that can feed 400 million people cannot clear its fields and loses at least 12 billion of GDP every year due to mined land, it's a major challenge, Sviridenko said of Buffett. According to Ukraine's Ministry of Economy, the country's agricultural sector has lost 20.5% of its farmland since the invasion due to landmines, occupation, and ongoing fighting. Roughly 53,670 square miles of Ukrainian land, about the size of the state of New York, are potentially mined. Two-thirds of that territory consists of fertile farmland where generations of Ukrainians have grown wheat. Since the beginning of the war, 335 people have been killed and 823 wounded in mine-related incidents. An estimated 6.1 million people live in areas considered at risk of landmine contamination. Despite rocky relations and growing uncertainty in the United States, Buffett said he believes many U.S. lawmakers still support the principles of freedom and democracy and won't abandon Ukraine as it fights for its sovereignty. At the end of the day, I think the U.S. will do the right thing, but it may be a painful process and there may be a lot more Ukrainians that die, he said. The Buffett Foundation funded several bipartisan U.S. congressional delegations to Ukraine in 2023 and plans to bring another group in May. Buffett, whose foundation has worked in conflict zones for over two decades, said witnessing the conditions firsthand is critical to understanding the war's scale. He recalled one drive in particular from Kharkiv to Borova, near the front line, where he passed through village after village flattened by Russian attacks. He added that atrocities committed in towns like Bucha, Borodyanka, and Irpin, where Russian forces were accused of torturing, raping, and executing civilians, are often forgotten outside Ukraine. That's why showing up matters. Hearing it from the people living it is the only way to truly understand. Now for news on a couple of local events. Elkhart Historical Society hosts Sullivan Artists for Dinner Lecture April 25th, coming up. Landscape artist and columnist Janet Roney will be the featured speaker for the Elkhart Historical Society's Dinner Lecture on April 25th. Roney, whose realistic watercolor and oil paintings of central Illinois' prairie landscape have been featured in the Midwest art circuit for the last 30 years, she will be delivering a presentation entitled Frontier Tales and How Raccoons Saved Illinois from Canada. Her interest in history has also led her to author a column called Remembering Who We Are for her local newspaper, the Sullivan News Progress. The cost per person is $45. Doors will open at 5 p.m. at the Elkhart Christian Church's Fellowship Community Center, 206 South Gillett Street, and dinner will be served at 5:30 p.m. And news about Bagelfest. Bagelfest concert lineup announced. This is headline from Mattoon. Josh Turner, Everclear, and Megan Woods will grace the stage of the 40th Bagelfest. The annual celebration is set for July 16th through 19th in Peterson Park. This year's theme is Wild West Bagelfest. Woods, a contemporary Christian artist, will headline a free concert on the main stage on Thursday, July 17th. Donations will be accepted to benefit the local one-stop community Christmas program. Everclear, best known for hits like Santa Monica and Father of Mine, will perform Friday, July 18th with Champagne-based X-Crush as its opening act. Multi-platinum-selling country singer Turner and his unique bass baritone voice will round out the weekend on Saturday, July 19th. Turner is best known for Long Black Train and chart toppers Your Man, Would You Go With Me, and Why Don't We Just Dance. Opening the show are Jake and Michaela, a married duo from Central Illinois. Tickets for the Turner and Everclear concerts will go on sale at 8 p.m. Friday, April 11th. Bagelfest traces its roots to the 1986 when the Lenders Bagel Plant opened in Mattoon. Founding family members Murray Lender hosted a free bagel breakfast for the community. The breakfast evolved into an annual festival. While the plant has since changed hands, it is now Bimbo Bakeries USA, the breakfast, dubbed the world's biggest bagel breakfast, remains a staple of the event. It will once again be held from 7:30 to 9:30 a.m. Saturday, July 19th. Other highlights include the Miss Bagelfest pageants on Saturday, July 12th, and Bagel Bow Wow on July 16th. In addition to the breakfast, Saturday includes the Run for the Bagel 5K and the Bagelfest Parade. The carnival kicks off on Wednesday. Before we leave the local news, let's look at a couple of very interesting obituaries. The first is Robert Scott Busboom. I hope I'm pronouncing his name right. Robert Scott Busboom, 62, of Foley, Alabama, formerly of Decatur, passed away on February 26, 2025. A graduate of Urbana High School, Scott furthered his education at Parkland College before embarking on a diverse and impactful career. Over the years, Scott worked in farming, retail sales and management, and radio broadcasting. His passion for broadcasting led him to a long and fulfilling career with Cromwell Radio Group, where he co-hosted Busboom and Wolf weekday mornings with Doug Wolf. Although he cherished his role as a radio personality, his true love was sports broadcasting. A highlight of his career came when he followed the Millikan women's basketball team to a national championship. He broadcasted over 1,200 games throughout his career, including high school and college sports, and his voice became synonymous with Decatur Public School District 61, where he brought the excitement of local athletics to life. Scott's dedication to sports broadcasting was unmatched. Whether it was football, basketball, or baseball, Scott's enthusiasm and professionalism made every game feel important. He understood that beyond the scoreboard, every athlete was someone's child, grandchild, or loved one. His genuine care for the players and teams made him a beloved figure in the community. His passion for the job and his commitment to athletes were evident in each broadcast, and his legacy in local sports will never be forgotten. Scott's contributions to local sports were recognized when he was inducted into the Illinois High School Hall of Fame Broadcasting, a testament to the profound impact he had on the community. Visitation will be Saturday, April 12, 2025, from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. at Moran and Goebel Funeral Home. Funeral services will be private. That's Moran and Goebel in Decatur, Illinois. A second obituary, Doris Ellen Jones, 81 years old, of Allerton, passed away on Thursday, April 3rd, at Carl Foundation Hospital of Urbana. Memorial donations may be made to the Champaign County Humane Society. That's 4003 Kearns Drive in Champaign. Per her wishes, Doris will be cremated and there will be no service. A graveside service will take place at a later date for family at the time of interment at Lower Mound Cemetery in Covington, Indiana. And now for one very important national story. The headline reads, more than 5 million people could lose Medicaid coverage if feds impose work requirements. Under an emerging Republican plan to require some Medicaid recipients to work, between 4.6 million and 5.2 million adults ages 19 to 55 could lose their health care coverage, according to a new analysis. The study conducted by Urban Institute researchers with support from the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation calculated that up to 39% of the 13.3 million adults in that age group who became eligible for Medicaid when their states expanded the program under the Affordable Care Act would lose coverage if Congress requires states to impose work rules. The report suggests that most of those people would lose coverage not because they aren't complying with the rules, but because they would struggle to report their compliance to the state. Quote, most adults who would lose eligibility for federal Medicaid funding are working, engaged in work-related activities, or could qualify for exemptions not readily identifiable through state databases, but could still face disenrollment because of the reporting requirements. The study identified several barriers to reporting, including lack of broadband access and lack of transportation. 40 states plus the District of Columbia expanded Medicaid under the ACA, the Affordable Care Act. Overall, nearly 72 million people, about a fifth of Americans, are enrolled in the program for low-income people, which is funded jointly by the federal government and the states. Traditional Medicaid insurance was mainly available to children and their caregivers, people with disabilities, and pregnant women. The ACA, commonly known as Obamacare, allowed states to extend coverage to adults making up to 138% of the federal poverty level, about $21,000 a year for a single person. Nationwide, more than 21 million people with low incomes have health insurance because of expanded Medicaid eligibility. U.S. House Republicans in February pushed through a budget plan, now under consideration in the Senate, that would require about $880 billion in cuts to Medicaid over the next decade to help cover the costs of $4.5 trillion in tax cuts. The budget doesn't contain specifics on how that target would be met, but work requirements are a likely money-saving option. A 2023 analysis from the nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office found that imposing work rules on Medicaid recipients ages 19 to 55 who are not parents or caregivers would cut federal spending by an estimated $109 billion over the next 10 years. Another headline. Fewer foreigners visit the U.S. Olya Ivanich looked forward to welcoming some cousins from Sweden to her Denver home in June. Ivanich and the four travelers were planning to go hiking in Colorado and then visit Los Angeles and San Francisco. But then President Donald Trump berated Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky in a February meeting at the White House. Ivanich's four relatives immediately canceled their scheduled trip and decided to vacation in Europe instead. The way Trump treated a Democratic president that's in a war was beyond comprehension to them, said Ivanich, who is a U.S. CEO of an Austria-based health startup, Longevity Labs. The U.S. tourism industry expected 2025 to be another good year in terms of foreign travelers. The number of international visitors to the United States jumped in 2024, and some forecasts predicted arrivals from abroad this year would reach pre-COVID levels. But 3 months into the year, international arrivals are plummeting, angered by Trump's tariffs and rhetoric, and alarmed by reports of tourists being arrested at the border. Some citizens of other countries are staying away from the U.S. and choosing to travel elsewhere. The federal government's National Travel and Tourism Office released preliminary figures Tuesday showing visits to the U.S. from overseas fell 11.6% in March, compared to the same month last year. The figures did not include arrivals from Canada, which is scheduled to report tourism data later this week, or land crossings from Mexico, but air travel from Mexico dropped 23%. For the January to March period, 7.1 million visitors entered the U.S. from overseas, 3.3% fewer than during the first 3 months of 2024. The travel forecasting company Tourism Economics, which as recently as December anticipated the U.S. would have nearly 9% more international arrivals this year, revised its annual outlook last week to predict a 9.4% decline. Tourism Economics expects some of the steepest declines will be from Canada, where Trump's repeated suggestion that the country should become the 51st state and tariffs on close trading partners have angered residents. Canada was the largest source of visitors to the U.S. in 2024, with more than 20.2 million, according to government data. Flight Centre Travel Group Canada, a travel booking site, said leisure bookings to the U.S. destinations were down 40% in March compared to the same month a year ago. Air Canada has reduced its schedule of spring flights to Florida, Las Vegas, and Arizona due to lack of demand. The National Travel and Tourism Office gave a rosier forecast last month for international travel to the U.S. Based on 2024 travel patterns, the office said it expected arrivals to increase 6.5% to 77.1 million this year and surpass 2019 levels in 2026. But Tourism Economics said the impact of the less favorable view of the U.S. from abroad could be severe enough that international visits won't surpass pre-pandemic levels until 2029. The survey data is all indicating a significant mix of cancellations and a massive drop in intent to travel, Tourism Economics President Adam Sachs said. Ian Urquhart, a professor emeritus of the University of Alberta in Edmonton, Canada, was supposed to go to Las Vegas for 5 days in June and see Coldplay in concert. He canceled the trip in protest to Trump's, quote, incredibly disparaging tone toward Canada, even though it meant losing $500 deposit on the vacation package. His oldest daughter similarly nixed a planned May trip to Sedona, Arizona, while his brother-in-law decided not to go on his usual week-long golf trip to Scottsdale, Arizona, according to Urquhart. None of us jumped for joy when we made those decisions, but it seemed to be one of the few ways we could signal how we felt about the bullying that has been directed towards Canada by your president. For Pepa Cuevas and her husband, who live in Madrid, Trump's election in November was a turning point. The couple had planned to spend a month skiing in Colorado over the winter holidays. They went to Japan instead. Trump's victory left us, especially me, very shocked. For the moment, we have lost the desire to return. I don't know what will happen in the future, but for the moment, we are still shocked, and it doesn't look like this is going to be resolved.